Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
On the Brian Lehrer Show today, David Graham from The Atlantic Magazine wonders if Trump campaign officials might soon start singing Warren Zevon.
The way I always do. How was I to know? She was with the Russians too.
How was I to know she was with the Russians too? Sang Warren Zevon from Lawyers, Guns, and Money in 1978. A lyric with new relevance 40 years later, now that the New York Times has reported that during the campaign, not just afterwards with Michael Flynn, Trump campaign aides had repeated contacts with Russian intelligence. So now we are into out-and-out palace intrigue, Kremlinology, literally and seriously. How many more shoes are there to drop? Let's start there as we bring on Atlantic Magazine political writer David Graham, who we can also call today's guest DJ. Hi, David. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you for having me.
How's a young guy like you pulling a Warren Zevon reference out of your hat?
Oh, Warren Zevon is timeless. He knows no era.
You wrote a take on the Times article that says if the leaks that doomed Flynn were a signal from the intelligence community, perhaps the intended message was, you ain't seen nothing yet. What were you thinking?
Well, we just keep seeing an endless string. So, you know, we went through this saga of Flynn being pushed out after the you know, intelligence leak suggesting that he had in fact misled the vice president and the American people about his contacts with the Russian ambassador. Within hours of that, we have this New York Times story focusing in on Trump aides speaking with Russian intelligence. And you know, while I was writing this story, CNN released another report about contact with some sort of Russians, which is a little bit vague. It just seems like we're in a cycle where there's leak after leak, and each new leak seems to feed another one as people reveal more information about Trump insiders.
How good information is there about who leaked the news on Flynn lying to his superiors in the Trump administration about discussing sanctions with the Russians? Is this payback for Trump dissing the intelligence community for weeks, trying to cast doubt on their findings that Russia hacked the election?
I think you can take it in a lot of different directions. One theory is that it is the intelligence community sort of striking back. Trump has gone after them. He's questioned their judgment going back into the presidential campaign. And, you know, nobody likes to be gone after that way. Another theory is that this is sort of the revenge of Obama appointees in the administration. Certainly in the case of the Flynn story, a central player is Sally Yates, who is an Obama appointee who then became acting attorney general during the transition. She was, of course, fired after saying the Justice Department wouldn't carry out the immigration executive order. Now, you know, no one is saying publicly, at least, that Yates herself is the source of the leak, but there you have a connection to the Obama administration. And then the third possibility, which is maybe the most benign one from the leakers' perspective, is, you know, these are people who are deeply concerned about what the administration is doing and what its ties are, and they feel like they need to speak up.
The Times article stopped short of making the claim that would really alter the universe, that anyone from the Trump campaign colluded with the Russians on hacking the election. Have you parsed where the line is on what the Trump aides reportedly did and didn't do that there's actual evidence of so far?
You know, it's pretty unclear, and I think that would be, as you say, that would sort of end the world. It's interesting that the intelligence community is looking on that and trying to figure out if there is such a thing. You know, what's weird about this is there's no – that is a bright line. But a lot of these things are in this marshy gray area. It does make sense for members of an administration to be in touch ahead of time with foreign counterparts to sort of get up and get running. There's a reason we have a formalized transition process. But also some of these things seem to be pushing toward over the line. And so the question is, where is the line and when does somebody break it? With Flynn's firing, you know, what the White House says is – he didn't violate any rules. Everything he did was okay. The only problem was that he breached trust with the president. And so you see them trying to lay down a marker that this is not about any kind of violation of protocol.
Because let's just say it. If Trump colluded with the Russians to hack the election or knew about his people colluding with the Russians to hack the election, then he might actually get impeached. It's not crazy to raise the I word this early, right, for that specific scenario.
It's an unthinkable scenario. You can't think of a case where a presidential candidate has colluded with a foreign power, a not entirely friendly one, to undermine an election and an opponent. You would think that would probably get the I word flying. Of course, that requires a Congress that that wants to go after Trump, and it's a little bit unclear whether we have that, although, you know, these things are fluid and maybe members of Congress would come around.
Right. And again, to be clear, only if the evidence goes all the way to that point, which so far it doesn't, but crumbs along the trail are leading in that direction. That doesn't mean they will lead there or that that fact exists, but we're getting closer to that question being a relevant question with the Times reporting now and CNN reporting now that people from the Trump campaign had repeated contacts with Russian intelligence during the election campaign at the same time that they were hacking the Democrats' emails. Listeners, you have any questions about the fallout from the Michael Flynn resignation for David Graham from The Atlantic? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or via Twitter. You can also help David Graham write a future article by tweeting your songs from the 1970s that apply to the Trump administration. Let's see what we come up with at Brian Lehrer. 212-433-WNYC on the phones, 433-9692. David wrote an article, Five Questions Raised by Michael Flynn's Abrupt Departure, and you can add your sixth, seventh, and eighth. And David, I see one of your questions is through the lens of two competing teams inside the White House, a more Republican establishment squad led by Chief of Staff Reince Priebus, who used to be chair of the Republican Party, and an insurgent squad led by Steve Bannon, of course. How competitive can you tell if these wings really are with each other? And is it just over personalities or also over policy?
So one way to check is we've got two levels of leaks going on. There are these kind of national security leaks, but then there's also the very leaky West Wing. And you see the kind of leaks and counter leaks. Even in this situation, you know, it's a very strange, it's a different sort of Kremlinology. Immediately after Flynn was fired, several of the reports reported that Steve Bannon had been the one who really told Flynn, you've got to go, you've got to resign. The next day, the White House said, no, it was Trump who made the decision. Meanwhile, Breitbart reports, which is close to Steve Bannon, of course, reports that Reince Priebus made the decision. My colleague Rosie Gray reported that people in the White House and in the Bannon wing are upset about the Breitbart report, they say. So it's very hard to disentangle where things are. But I think the pace of leaks making either the Priebus and Sean Spicer folks look bumbling or making the Bannon and Miller folks look bumbling shows the level of competition between the two.
And you wrote a separate article called The Nationalistic Right is Coming for Reince Priebus. Who is that and how?
Well, so what you see is this Breitbart article which says, you know, the firing of Michael Flynn is the revenge of Republican insiders and the GOP establishment. These people don't really get Trump. They've never been against Trump. They're kind of they're Manchurian candidates within the administration, if you will. And so Michael Flynn's firing is just the first step in getting rid of people like him and Steve Bannon and Stephen Miller. And that alarms the Breitbart people who, for whom General Flynn was kind of a hero and a lodestar. And so you see jockeying for position already at this point.
And Flynn was in the Steve Bannon, Stephen Miller wing, the sort of white Christian nationalist wing, or you call it the nationalistic right. Responsible for the travel ban and the foreboding inaugural address, things like that. But you were just discussing how the Times and Politico reported that Bannon wanted Flynn fired as early as last Friday, and the president wanted to wait a few days and see if things calmed down and if Flynn could survive the firestorm. If that's accurate, why might Bannon have wanted his ally Flynn to get the early boot?
I think Flynn looked pretty toxic at the point when he's lying to the vice president and then allowing the vice president to mislead the American people. It's really bad news for the administration. And Steve Bannon is maybe strongly ideological, but he also is on some level a pragmatist, and he understands how to run things. And one possibility is he just saw the writing on the wall and thought, we can't deal with this kind of distraction. We've got to get him out of here.
Val in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with David Graham from The Atlantic. Hi.
Oh, hi. Thanks for having me. I love your show, and I was just so you guys were talking about the I word earlier, impeachment, and I was wondering between today and yesterday's show discussion, what about the T word for treason, depending on how much, you know, comes out with the investigations that are going on?
Yeah, and I think we're a pretty long way from treason, but are they talking about the T word in Washington? Treason would have to be an act against the United States on behalf of some other country, I guess, which, of course, if anybody in the Trump campaign was actually acting on behalf of Russia in opposition to the interests of the United States, I don't know that you can say that about Flynn, because it was going to become policy to be more friendly with the Russians. I don't know, but maybe you can.
Yeah, I think a lot of these things are places where, the Trump administration thinks American interests actually do align with Russia on some issues. You know, the bar for treason is very high. We're a long way away from that. You did see a lot of people talking with Flynn about violations of the Logan Act, which bars unauthorized U.S. citizens from negotiating U.S. foreign policy, in essence. But the thing about the Logan Act is there have been no or one successful prosecution under the act in American history. So all of these things are pretty long shots. And it seems like there are consequences that are faster, like Flynn being forced to resign, and more immediate in the offing first.
Leah in New Providence, you're on WNYC. Hi, Leah.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I had two questions. My first one was, how do we actually get Republicans, who obviously control both the House and the Senate, to investigate these contacts with Russia? And then my second question is, having read the New York Times article today, if the FBI, the New York Times article said that the FBI actually knew about these communications between the Trump campaign and Russia back in October, why didn't they come forward with that information before the election?
David, you have answers?
I mean, this is a great question. We saw that James Comey was obviously fairly eager to keep Congress and, by extension, the American public updated about the investigation into Hillary Clinton's email server, including announcing that he was not going to press charges or suggest charges, then announcing that they had reopened and then announcing they closed. If Comey was aware of this, the question is, why did he not say something earlier? One thing we've learned is that reportedly when Sally Yates wanted to bring to the administration the point that Flynn appeared to be lying, Comey was initially reluctant before coming around. It's hard to know, you know, why, what trips over Comey's thought process and he isn't saying. I think there is, notwithstanding the Clinton stuff, generally a little bit of a taboo against coming forward and speaking about this stuff out of turn. But what we see is people who are freaking out and are very worried and are deciding that it's time to start speaking out of turn.
So to Leah's question as to whether the Republicans are going to do a serious investigation, here's an exchange yesterday between Jake Tapper on CNN and Republican Senator Barb Corker of Tennessee, head of the Foreign Relations Committee, who he was interviewing.
Your colleague, Senator Mark Warner of Virginia, a Democrat, the vice chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee, says that General Flynn should testify under oath before lawmakers about this issue. Do you agree?
I think that would be a great contribution. I understand that if there happen to be other investigations that are underway, and I don't know of any, but if there happen to be, for instance, an FBI investigation or some other type of investigation, that could complicate that. But no, I think it would be very useful for General Flynn to come before the committee and talk about what the relationship was, and I hope that's going to take place.
Senator Barb Corker, Republican from Tennessee, chair of the Foreign Relations Committee. So David Graham from The Atlantic, that sounds fairly serious. Somebody in Bob Corker's position saying Flynn should come and testify before Congress.
Yeah, and I think you see a split. There are a couple of splits. One is between the Senate and the House. On the House side, you don't seem to see a lot of appetite for investigations. Jason Chaffetz, who heads the House Oversight Committee, has sent letters about Kellyanne Conway violating rules on endorsing products, which is interesting. And he also is concerned about security precautions at Mar-a-Lago. He says so far hasn't been as concerned about the other stuff.
And we should remember that Jason Chaffetz loved to investigate Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama.
Right, exactly. He was already with Clinton investigations even before she had been elected, but now is a little bit less eager. The Senate side has always been more concerned
before
about the
Before she
Russian
what?
Stuff.
Clinton wasn't elected. What were you saying?
Well, before the election, he had a list of investigations he was ready to launch. And was, you know, openly bragging about these and how he would, you know, he was ready to go, wasn't going to wait for inauguration day. On the Senate side, there's been more eagerness to investigate the Russian things and more concern from people like Corker, for example. On the other hand, Rand Paul gave an interview to CNN yesterday where he said, well, I don't really know that it does a lot of good for Republicans to be investigating Republicans, which is maybe more honest than he intended to be. So we'll see whether people are aggressive. What you see is a lot of Republicans taking up the White House line, which is forget the substance of these leaks. The problem is these leaks are occurring, and we need to investigate where they're coming from and look into the intelligence community.
David Graham from The Atlantic with us on WNYC. If you missed the beginning of the hour, we played a little bit of an old Warren Zevon song that refers to somebody sleeping with a waitress and not realizing that even she was a Russian spy. So we asked, well, what other songs from the 70s might David include in his next article? And so you ready for a couple that have come in here? Couple of my fave 70s tunes, writes one listener, are Take the Money and Run, for obvious reasons, and The Spy Who Loved Me, because why not? And someone else says, it's 1982, this song, but President Gas by the Psychedelic Furs. So I'm just laying them out there for you. Keep them coming, folks, at Brian Lehrer. Here's a question on Twitter from a listener who asks, what possible reason would there be for Trump election officials to be in touch with Russian spies if not to collude? That's a really good question regarding the new report in the Times that Trump election, you know, campaign aides had repeated contacts with Russian intelligence during the campaign. But so far, they don't have any evidence that those contacts were to collude on hacking the election. So this listener asked, what point would there be to talking to Russian officials if you're a Trump campaign aide, if not to collude? Are there any hypotheses about that?
Well, so one answer is the one that Paul Manafort gave, which is, I think, basically the Warren Zevon defense. Well, maybe I talked to Russian intelligence officials, but I didn't know. He said that, you know, these people don't wear badges that say I'm a Russian intelligence official. And it's true that when you're dealing in places like Ukraine and in Eastern Europe and in business, you may encounter folks who are in intelligence and also have some sort of cover. But it's a really good question. We don't know why these conversations would have gone on and what they were talking about. And one immediately thinks of things like the intelligence dossier, which you know, had all these suggestions about nefarious ties between Trump in both business and politics and the Russians. One thing we know is the FBI is continuing to look into that dossier and still trying to nail down whether any of the allegations are true, although so far we don't have any proof that any of them are.
Let's take another call. Here is Mike in East Mauritius. You're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I saw a comment recently where someone said that unless the Russians knew that Flynn was acting on behalf of Trump, they probably wouldn't have entertained his phone calls. So it kind of points toward Trump actually being involved in some manner. But more importantly, I see the point where anybody that would be involved in moving this investigation further, whether it's Sessions as Attorney General or any of the chair people of the committees, they all have a conflict of interest because they either, you know, served on the campaign or whatnot. Unless there's a groundswell of support for, you know, furthering this investigation by the American people, these Republicans are going to stonewall. And when you talk to the Democrats, you know, the diehard Hillary fans are saying, well, you know, they basically shut down when you ask them, well, you know, what is it that they were actually exposing with these hacks? And, you know, for a lot of people, they're going to say that they were exposing the fact that the Clinton administration colluded with the DNC and the media to steal the nomination. So, you know, until that's addressed, I don't see any groundswell of support. And when I discuss this with diehard Democrats, they shut down the conversation. So if you could address that, I'd appreciate it. I'd like to hear something about the content of those emails that makes, the general population say, yeah, this is something that was not a favor to the American people by keeping Hillary out of office.
David?
Well, I think that it is true that we, you know, these emails were interestingly revealing about the doings of the DNC. You know, I think the idea that the DNC was friendly to Hillary Clinton should, first of all, it was fairly apparent simply from outside appearances, and it shouldn't have come as a big surprise that the Clinton family, with long ties in Democratic politics, had these relationships. I mean, I think there are two possibilities. One is you can believe that Hillary Clinton and her organization were unsavory, perhaps even corrupt. And you can also believe that it's worrisome for foreign governments to be interfering in elections by going through and doing these hacks, especially if, as the intelligence community has concluded, the point was specifically to help one presidential candidate, Donald Trump, over the other.
Let me play a clip of Chuck Schumer from yesterday, which I think might go to part of the caller's point here. This is 30 seconds of Senator Schumer.
There needs to be an independent and transparent investigation, because the White House knew for weeks that General Flynn misled the vice president, and that his discussion about sanctions with the Russian government could potentially compromise our national security because he was subject to blackmail. And yet, they let him stay on for weeks, present at and participating in the highest level of national security discussions.
Senator Schumer yesterday. And David, he went on to call for Attorney General Sessions to recuse himself from any investigation because he's too close to the Trump administration. He's part of the Trump administration. I don't know if that means a special prosecutor in the old, you know, Watergate or Bill Clinton sense. But do you know what Schumer was calling for? And is that the way that the Democrats are rallying behind to get some kind of independent investigation of how far this goes?
Yeah, I mean, you see Democrats pushing for something like that, trying to get around Trump loyalists and also to try to get around the fact that Republicans in Congress are not exactly raring to investigate. Sessions has indicated that, at least at this point, he has no interest in stepping aside. What the White House is doing is saying they're kind of downplaying this blackmail question. They're downplaying questions of whether there was a violation of either law or protocol in Flynn doing this and saying, look, we investigated it. We decided everything was fine. The only problem was that he had misled the vice president. So they're trying to shift it to the most benign thing, which is basically an interpersonal conflict. And Democrats are saying,
Is that just to protect Flynn from prosecution, to be loyal to their guy? I saw Sean Spicer do his press briefing yesterday, and I was surprised to hear him draw that particular line. It's just what you said. He said he was fired for misleading the vice president. That's where it ends. We don't think he did anything illegal, violated the Logan Act, anything like that. We just lost confidence in him because he lied to the vice president. Are they just trying to protect him from prosecution because he's their guy?
I think they're trying to protect themselves, too. If the national security advisor was breaking the law and was doing anything that could be possibly illegal, that will reflect poorly on the White House. It will create a larger investigation. And, you know, you mentioned the Whitewater days. As we know from Whitewater, once you start pulling on a string, things go in all sorts of weird directions that you can come up with damaging stories that had very little to do with the original prompt.
Alex in Park Slope, you're on WNYC. Hi, Alex.
Good morning, Brian. How about American Pie? Don't know the title, but the lyric, but the title sure sounds good. Bye bye, Miss American Pie. My call is about, never mind the I word, how about the V word? Let's avoid the election. And the rationale for that is, if there's an I word, then it simply means that we know who takes over, right? Mike Pence. he knew that all along.
So the V word, void the election. Boy, I hear Democrats saying this. I don't know if it makes it to, you know, Beltway reporting circles, David Graham from The Atlantic. But, boy, Democrats are saying to me, this should be a do-over. It's early enough that it doesn't have to be a divorce. It could be an annulment. We're only on day 27 here. And if they find that the election was stolen to the degree that the Trump campaign colluded with the Russians to hack the Clinton campaign, then they should void the election and do a do-over. There's probably no constitutional mechanism for that, but Alex speaks for a lot of pissed off people.
I think that's exactly right. I have heard those things too. The problem is you don't really have a good mechanism for it. There was this idea going around that Mike Pence was kind of the Cheney on steroids behind the throne in the situation and was really pulling the strings and was kind of positioning himself to take over if Trump flamed out. Something that's been interesting in the last few days is it seems like Pence is a little bit out of the loop. Trump reportedly knew that Flynn had lied to Pence and did not fire Flynn until after it had become public. And also apparently Pence didn't know that Flynn had lied to him until he read about it in the Washington Post. So there seems to be maybe a little bit less of this organization and intrigue than some people would imagine there is in the White House.
Let's linger on that for a minute, because I think that's an interesting piece of the palace intrigue, and I'm not sure where it leads, that reportedly Trump knew that Flynn discussed the sanctions with the Russians. Trump knew for many days before anyone told Pence, and yet Pence is the one who seems to have been victimized by spreading the lie unwittingly on TV that Flynn didn't talk about sanctions with the Russians because Flynn lied to him, Pence, about it. What would be the reason, if that's all accurate, for Trump and presumably Bannon and a few other members of the inner circle to have known that Flynn lied to Pence and kept Pence out of that loop? Why might they have done that?
Well, for one thing, keep in mind that Trump has been close to Flynn for probably longer than Pence. Flynn was an early supporter. He seemed to align with Trump ideologically. He was speaking on the stump for him and was kind of a backer. Pence came along a little bit later and was sort of an odd fit, a lot of people thought initially, and remains in some ways an odd fit with the Trump administration. So it may simply be that Trump's loyalty to Flynn, at least until it became a public relations fiasco, outdid any sort of concerns about the damage to Pence. It may be that Pence is also just not as closely into the West Wing as we think and is being boxed out a little bit by folks like Steve Bannon.
And let me play one more Trump clip to this point. I'm not sure this is necessarily so out of the ordinary, but last Friday, I guess this was, after Trump did apparently already know what Flynn did and that Flynn was on thin ice with him for even keeping his job. Trump was, and the sound quality is not great on this, but Trump was going from place to place and a reporter shouted a question about the Flynn situation. And here's what Trump said.
What do you make of reports that General Flynn had conversations with the Russians about sanctions before you responded?
I don't know about it. I haven't seen it. What report is it? I haven't seen that. I'll look at that.
So really bad sound quality, but the journalist was asking, have you seen the Washington Post report? Because that surfaced on Friday that day. That's what really made it public, about Flynn having contact with the Russians about sanctions. Trump knew at that time. I think that's been well established. But he said, what report? I don't know about any report. So there's some discussion now that, he was, you know, dissembling there and denying that he knew something that he really knew. Maybe he didn't know about the Washington Post story, even if he knew about Flynn. Is that a big deal at all?
It's a mystery. I mean, as you say, the White House said, Sean Spicer said yesterday that Trump had known about this since January. His explanation for that clip was, well, Trump just hadn't seen the Washington Post report. Which may be strictly true, but it's an odd response because there's nothing in what Trump said that would indicate that he had some idea about the background. Now, you know, politicians try to spin and put up a wall of silence all the time, so it's hard to know. But it's difficult to understand what was going on and to know whether to take seriously the claim that Trump had known about this since sometime in January. The timeline is just very confusing.
Let's do one more question, and then we're going to be out of time. How about Vincent in Warren, New Jersey? You're on WNYC. Hi, Vincent.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, I take issue with the statement several minutes ago regarding that you have to really worry about where the leaks are coming from and not worry about the substance of the leaks. I think that's ridiculous.
I don't think anybody said that. I mean, that's Trump's line right now, but I don't think we said that.
Your guess had, maybe I misunderstood your guess, then I apologize, but I think that is ridiculous, like, regardless of who said it. But I mean, these people are doing their jobs. They're trying to protect the country and the American people. And quite honestly, for him to say the leaks are more important than the substance, that's crazy.
Right. So Trump is using – so by way of political analysis, because I don't think you said what Vincent heard, David, just by way of political analysis, Trump is trying to put the focus on the leaks, the fact that this information about Flynn, for example, and about his campaign aides having had contact with the Russians before the election, that the bigger issue is leaks, things
right.
from
the
within
White
the
House
government party. Being leaked. And that's an issue. Leaks are always an issue. Leaks of classified information are certainly a legitimate issue. But he's using it right now as a distraction from the main story.
Right. It's a ploy to try to change the subject. And I think a lot of people feel, as the caller does, that that's out of line and it's beside the point. And what we really need to be focusing on is what's in the leaks and the damaging information in them.
All right. David Graham, Washington Post politics reporter, following the palace intrigue. Before you go, I just want to touch on one other thing, and I don't know if you're on this story, but there does seem to be one Trump cabinet nominee who's actually in real trouble now. They've all gotten through so far. Labor Secretary nominee and fast food chain mogul Andrew Pudzer, because four Republican senators are now expressing doubt. Do you know if and why Pudzer's in trouble?
I think there's a variety of things. You know, he's been slow to release his disclosures. He's shown some hesitations about the process, but also his record is difficult to defend the record, which is, I think, in a lot of ways can be presented as against the working class. And that's dangerous even for Republican senators. You also have a tale about a divorce from his first wife, which was quite acrimonious. That seems to be bubbling up and causing some trouble, too. So between his hesitations and his record and both personal and business, I think he is in a lot of trouble.
Well, thanks for coming on. I love the Warren Zevon. We have invited people to tweet any other songs from the 70s that apply to the Trump administration. The latest one to come in, somebody suggests Blondie, Contact in Red Square, which includes the lyric, "Our last contact in Red Square, unless I have to run, and the long arms of the CIA detect me." So keep them coming. Tweet at Brian Lehrer your songs from the 1970s that apply to the Trump administration, and maybe they will make it into the next David Graham article in The Atlantic, like the Warren Zevon song did today. David, thanks a lot.
Thank you so much.
Too.